Hi, thanks for joining us on Hometown to Hollywood. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide. And today my guest on this podcast is Patrick Day. Patrick is a veteran acting coach and director of Young Actors Space, an acclaimed acting school in Los Angeles. Young Actors Space offers classes aimed at students from age 5 on up. They also offer workshops, on-camera audition technique, dialect classes, and individual coaching. Patrick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
It is my pleasure to be sitting across from you. Tell me a little bit about the history of Young Actors Space.
So Young Actors Space was started in 1979 by Diane Hill Hardin and Nora Eckstein, who was her partner in crime at the time. And it was really the first school to work professionally for children on camera. You know, back in 79 and the 80s, there would be three shows on ABC, NBC, CBS. There was usually a family, and there were usually kids within that family. And most of them were coming here because this was the place where you were doing real work for on-camera stuff.
That is a heck of a history. Well, so Young Actors Space has launched, in fact, a huge number of successful young actors, and the list is ridiculous, but I'm just going to name a few of them right here. Leo DiCaprio, Emma Stone, Jessica Biel, Miranda Cosgrove, Hilary Duff, Tobey Maguire, Lucy Hale, Shailene Woodley, Sabrina Carpenter, Karan Brar. It goes on and on. It's an incredible list. What do you think accounts for the extraordinary high success rate of your students?
I think it's magic.
Magic! You heard it here first.
Yes, exactly. No, I honestly, I think that, well, first of all, thank you. We seem very lucky to get these faces in here pretty much every day. And I think what we do and what we try to do here is find the best version of the actor that shows up. So we're not one of those schools that's here to tear you down in order to build you up. I've never subscribed to that theory. I think it's a bunch of hootenanny, to be honest with you. I think what we want to do is we want to find what you're bringing to the table and then sort of use that to make the best version of you as possible. Because, after all, this is an art form. So you need to be comfortable when you're going in these rooms, and I think that's what we're focusing on here.
I love that. Well, that would explain a lot of success, you know? You can't be successful if you're not grounded and comfortable in yourself. Never mind technique and
right.
Things like that. Speaking of which, can you describe what your approach to acting is? You know, there's a lot of different ways that people go about this, and I'm always curious about the differences. So how do you guys do that here?
You know, Diane came up with this. It's on our wall out front, relax, listen, react, which is our motto here. And after teaching for a while, I added a couple things to that, which is the beginning you want to analyze, you want to personalize, and then you want to memorize. So mm-hmm. You get a set of sides. You want to analyze them, look at them, discover them. Then you want to personalize them, figure out how that affects you, or if you were that character, how would you behave under those circumstances? And then obviously get the lines down so you memorize it so you can go in. And then when it's time to audition or perform, relax, listen, and react. And that technique has seemed to work for us. Now, what we do in classes is our classes are half improv and half scene study. So the goal is to make the improvs look like the written word and make the written word seem as if it's an improvisation. So usually in classes, we will do both. We'll do improvs for the first half, and then we'll get into scene work after that.
That's very cool. I like that. I like the combination of those two things, and I like having each of them try to be as much like the other as possible. I don't think I've heard of that approach before.
You know, it feels super important because as an actor, as a young artist, whatever age, you're going to come in, you're going to want to make certain choices, and you're going to go into a casting, and hopefully they're strong and specific choices based on that personalization. But on a dime, that casting director is going to give you a note, and you have to change. So you can't be locked into anything that's not playable, you know. And plus, as you're aware, you get a series, you might have a different director every week. And one director might speak Meisner. One director might say, I don't need any of that. One might go Spolin. One might go, just shut up and say the lines.
Damn
and
it.
You have to be, exactly, yes. And you have to be in a position as an actor that you are, like in life, totally pliable. Because life is an improv. We want it to be specific. We want it to be planned out. We should have our plan. But at the end of the day, life's an improv.
I want that on a bumper sticker. I can assure you it's going on. It's going on my Instagram for sure. That's a really good one. Life is an improv. I love that. You know, the thing you just mentioned is something that I think is probably not widely known. We didn't know it. If you're doing TV, it's true. You have a revolving door of directors. If you're fortunate enough to get on a series, you're not going to have the same director every week. And that keeps you on your toes. I mean, it can be like a sort of ongoing masterclass if you're lucky.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what you're hoping.
You know? You're lucky.
Well, and you learn every day on set at every audition. That's the goal, is to keep your eyes open and your ears open and be aware, because it is constantly evolving and changing.
Yeah, but what good training. I love that. So how do you structure your classes other than what you just mentioned, which is that you've got a kind of 50-50 emphasis on improv and scene study, which I do think is just really cool.
Well, thank you. You know, when I first started teaching, when I got here out of college and I first started teaching, there was this hesitation about what I was going to be able to give back. And so I would do schedules and outlines, and this is what we're doing, and this week we're hitting this, and this week we're going to do this, and treating it more like a college class. Now, I had just come out of college, so that would be where my headspace was. And I realized after a couple of years of doing that, that was starting to get in my way. Because what if somebody from last week is still working on what we were working on last week? And now you're leaving that behind, and you're moving forward. So the reality is, when I come into class, now, fortunately, after doing this long, it's an energy. I'll feel what these guys are bringing in, and on a day, I may come in with a plan of doing something, and the moment we warm up, there's a different feeling in that room, and we're going to throw it out, and we're going to go with this. So oftentimes, I'll dictate where we're starting, but that's never where we end up, because as I said, it's all an improv, so you've got to be open to the energy in that room. Now, there are certain nights that we have here that I'll have to give them a week in advance because I might have them prepped to bring something in. But even within that, improv-wise, it's going to change because something may come up where it's an opportunity to teach, and that's really what you're looking for. It's a lot like parenting.
Mm-hmm.
You're constantly looking for an opportunity to teach. You know?
Where is the teaching moment?
Exactly. Yeah. And oftentimes it's the learning moment at the same time. You know?
Because our children are our greatest teachers.
Yes, absolutely.
In fact, I love that. Well, you know, it's interesting because in reality, like kids who fall in love with theater, you know, and find their way into acting that way, which is a very normal experience because there's theaters all over the country, more than there are opportunities to start with film and TV. You get weeks to memorize your mm-hmm. lines and, you know, get up on your feet and get the blocking and stuff. But in reality, in film and TV, you might get 24 hours if you're lucky to memorize those sides. Frequently, it's even less time than that. And then get out there and have your shot at it. So it's nice to give people a little bit of time, but they don't have that much time in reality. So
right.
It's good to get to keep things a little bit tighter. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And one of the most difficult things about once you've gotten the job and you're learning your lines and you're going to set is the days where you show up and they go, hey, you know, I remember working on a soap opera years ago and you'd learn 70 pages of dialogue because it's all narrative. And you show up and they're like, oh, great, Patrick, we're ready for you, except your scene partner called in sick today. So we're doing Friday's schedule today, and we'll do today, whatever day it is, Tuesday's schedule on Friday. So now you're learning another 50 pages of dialogue. Or one of the most difficult things is you do certain some things in an audition that get you the job. Now you're the visitor on that set. And the writers come to you in the morning and say, we've changed the script just a little bit. And those little changes for me personally, those are always the hardest. Once I've memorized it a certain way, then if it's two or three words that are out of place, it becomes harder for my brain to lock out of it. So again, it goes back to be ready to improvise mm-hmm. on the fly. You know, mm-hmm. I always say deliver that first take as written because you want to make sure the writers get what they want. And then if a director says you're free to improvise, then you can play. But you got to do the work first before you can come in and be able to do that.
Exactly, exactly. And it's super common on TV sets, especially for the lines to change as you're filming.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Like, the writers, they're going to huddle, and they're going to say, actually,
this isn't working, let's try this.
Yeah, yeah. So the more flexible an actor can be, regardless of how old they are. I mean, you could be an 8-year-old actor and have new lines thrown at you as you're filming.
Absolutely.
They're not going to exempt you from that just because you're
part
eight,
of the gig,
you know,
yeah.
Or 18 or whatever. So you also offer these summer intensives besides your regular classes. Talk to me about those. They look really fun. I'm here in the studio with you and I can see all these pictures up on the wall and the kids' faces are just shining.
Yeah. You know, I look forward to summer like I'm 10 years old. I really do, because our summer intensives, oftentimes people think we're insane for what we do, but it is an opportunity for us to, so Nora Eckstein, who I mentioned earlier, was one of the founders of the school. She's now living up in Seattle.
Shout out!
In your backyard, yes. And we bring her back for the summer intensives because she's our writer. So that none of the children are spear carriers, she comes in, we meet these kids, and day one, we sort of have a loose idea of what we're going to do. This is for the theater conservatory. And we start improvising with them. By day two, Nora has a pretty good idea of where the script's going. By day three, we start to have a script. By day four, we cast the script. And by day 10, we're performing an original one act, which, with your theater basis, you know what's involved in that. So we really
yeah.
create a piece of art in 10 days. And it's insane and exhausting and beautiful all at the same time.
It sounds glorious. It sounds like the best part of the year for some of these kids.
It's really a wonder. And, you know, now we've been doing it. This was our 16th year this year, or 16th performance of Nora and I doing this program. And we have kids that, you know, are now adults and are having children of their own and bringing them back for the summer conservatory. And they've made lifelong friends. And it's just... that's one of the great things about social media is you see these friendships that were created here that go on in life, you know, and it's really wonderful.
That's beautiful.
And then our other intensive, which we started a couple years ago, is an on-camera intensive. And again, we'll fly Nora in. She meets the kids day one. Now, this is a one-week intensive. It's a little bit shorter. And she'll write a 1 to 3 minute scene based on their personality and what serves them best for basically real.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll shoot on day five these scenes that we've rehearsed throughout the week, and they walk out of here with a real hands-on practical idea of what it's like to be on set and the limitations that are involved in that. I mean, we almost killed ourselves this year because we try to limit it to 15, but with the intensives, our regular classes, we limit it 15 because we want everybody to get plenty of work. But our intensives sometimes will go between 15 and 20 depending on the year and what we can get in. So we built 9 different sets over 2 days. You know, we have 3 rooms here. So we've got one set going here. We'll shoot it out. Then we'll come in here, shoot it out, go in the other room, shoot the other set, strike the sets, build 3 more sets, and get the kids in here. And they have a small window of time to show up, hit their marks. The practicality, you know, there was one set that we built a roof. These kids, it took place on a roof. So we had roofing tiles in here. And they have to learn that they can't lean back on a set or put their hand here.
Yeah, because like real life.
Exactly. So it's, you know, like I said, it's insane and exhausting, but I wouldn't change a moment of it. It's really a wonderful time.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Well, so this is neat because I get asked all the time, you know, does theater training help for film and TV? And my answer is always like, of course it does. It's acting, but it's also a bit different. It's not exactly the same. Can you tease apart some of the differences between acting on stage versus acting for film versus TV?
Sure. You know, obviously you can't lie to the camera and it's real close to your face. So the idea is, and obviously depending on the genre, it may change as well. But if we're doing a play, really I think in theater, they're looking more for athletes than actors. They want you to be an actor, but they want you to be an athlete as well, because the process, you're building this show for, in our case, 10 days, but in most cases, longer. And the physicality that's involved in you know, the stamina, the taking care of yourself, the showing up every day, the getting the lines down, the rehearsing, and then the having to change in a moment because now we're going a different direction. They really want athletes as well as actors. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen on film as well and TV.
I was going to say, honestly, that's been Dove's experience, is that exact description to be a lead in a show or a movie requires this profound amount of stamina and, frankly, physical fitness and mm-hmm. health to just get the heck through it.
Yeah. And I think it was Martin Landau said, this is a great analogy, he said, you know, when I do a play, it's like eating a 9-course meal every night. And he goes, when I do a film, it's just like having appetizers every day, which is really very well
That's cool.
Great description of what it feels like, because you're shooting out of order on set when you're doing a film, and you know, oh, I remember we did this scene before this 2 weeks ago, and you got to kind of review your notes. And but as the character, when you're doing a play, you're going through this process from the beginning to the end, from the moment you're sitting in the makeup chair and you're hearing the audience coming in to the moment you're taking your final bow and there's accolades, hopefully, of applause, and then you walk backstage and you pass out because you're exhausted and you get ready to do again tomorrow.
Yep.
Because it's ethereal and it's going to disappear, and the only people that are going to experience that magic are the ones that are in that room that night, whether it's your cast or your audience, you know. And oftentimes with film and television, quite honestly, you're stuck with it for the rest of your life. And then when you go back to it, you're like, I wish I could change this moment or do that or I'd do this differently, because we're all actors and we're all crazy in our heads anyway, so we're trying to figure out how to make it all perfect. When in reality, all those flaws are the perfection.
You know? So true.
Because it's behavior.
Yeah.
You know, the whole art form is about behavior.
It's humanity.
Yes, ma'am.
I love that. Thank you for that. Let's talk about auditioning.
Cool.
For a minute.
Great.
I think of auditioning as really its own skill set. It's a critical one, obviously. You can be a very fine actor, but if you're a lousy auditioner, no one will ever know.
Absolutely.
And weirdly, the reverse is true too, kind of, because if you're a really fine auditioner, but then once you're hired, you can't hold up your end of the deal.
Where's the longevity in that?
No longevity. Disastrous.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially now that so many auditions are done on tape, like that's its own thing. Talk to me about any, you know, what are some great approaches for actors to step into an audition, you know, and do their best and get their best shot at actually,
you know,
getting the role?
I'm going to go back to this, Diane said it, relax, listen, react. And that's one of the hardest things when you're going in
yep.
to the audition, because as we discussed, you have that green room psychology going all around, and am I good enough? Do I deserve to be here? And, you know, Nora, who I was telling you about, she always says, you know, there's always somebody more. There's always somebody more tall or more short or more fat or more skinny or more blue-eyed or brown-haired, or, and you can't worry about that. And that's one of the hardest things when you're sitting in that room and you're trying to be your best possible version of you and the character, when you're worried about all this other noise that's going on around. So, and I know we haven't spoken about the on-camera yet, but as far as going in the room, if you do the work beforehand, the analyze, personalize, memorize, you're a lot freer to relax, listen, and react. Now, sometimes you're just going to have a day. You're going to be dealing with traffic and heat and fire, and, you know, you're hopefully not late, but maybe you got lost on the way or something. And you want none of that to be in that room, and that's a very difficult thing
mm-hmm.
to sort of manage that, you know. But the reality is, if you can manage that and you find techniques that work for you, you're always going to have a better audition. And most actors tend to rush.
Ooh, everybody listen to this one, because this is true in my experience too.
Most actors tend to rush. So oftentimes, if you can take your time, you're setting yourself ahead of your competition. You know, I still put myself in those rooms. intentionally because I want to know what that feels like. And some of those rooms are great. I had an audition last week where I had a drive-on parking pass at the lot, which is rare here.
I was going to say, know, that's a sweet
it's rare
because
they usually tell you actors park in the back and find your way, which is nice. And, you know, so now you're walking in feeling great, but that's rare because there's other times where you're like street parking and they're, you know, ticketing and, you know, we need you in an hour and you're coming, you know, from either you're living on the west side and you're going to the valley or inevitably you're living in the valley and going to the west side. And that can get in your way.
Yeah.
You know, but ideally for me, I feel like it's always better if you get to get in the room. If you look at it as an opportunity, the casting director is not an enemy. They have chosen to meet you. And if this stuff is fun, then you're doing the right thing. If you're worried about the other crazy stuff that doesn't belong in that room, then that's going to get in your way. But if you're going in going, thank you for this opportunity, you know, if I have the opportunity to perform for the people that are making this decision, and by the time I go in that room, if I've done my work, I feel like I should, I'm not going to, but I feel like I should be putting that on my resume. Because I had the opportunity to audition for Hamlet, for the people that are doing Hamlet.
That's right.
You know? And if I look at it just as that, and then the moment I walk out of that room, forget about it, I feel like I'm doing my best work.
That's nice. That's a very nice approach for people. I hope everybody's listening to this and taking it to heart because that's really great advice. I agree. I think it's always preferable if you can to get in front of the casting director to be face-to-face. But unfortunately, these days,
correct,
that is less and less the case,
correct,
for various reasons, including budget constraints and everything else. So even if you've, you know, done whatever it took to move to Los Angeles or maybe New York to be available in the big market, you might still be, well, you will be, sending in a lot of self-tapes.
Yes.
So what about self-tape advice?
So I will comment on that because, you know, more and more of this is happening. I've had more clients in the past 3 years book directly off tape, never meeting the director until they show up to set. I had a client who worked on this HBO show a little bit ago, and he had sent in a tape in May. And casting kept calling back going, we're doing the show, and we still want to see this person. And he finally was booked and flew to New York in December to shoot from a tape that he'd done in May.
I'm hearing a lot of this, too. It's nuts. It's not like you find out a day or two or three later if you got the role. Sometimes
and sometimes you do.
Sometimes you do,
right?
You know, more often than not, you find
moves
out
quickly
soon.
You know. But and we've had that too, where I had a woman come in here, you know, she happened to be an adult and was put herself on tape. The director was in Canada at the time working on another film. She was from London, and this project was being shot in Australia. She came in here, we shot her a week later, she went to Australia, having never met anybody, she off of that tape, and then she calls me like 6 months later. I was like, how was that experience? She's like, incredible, so much in fact that the director is now doing another movie in Atlanta and wants me to play the trophy wife of William Shatner.
Woo!
So she booked two movies basically off of one tape. So there are advantages as well. You might be getting a call back when you're sound asleep or you're at celebrating your birthday and some producer's watching that tape and calling you in. You just never know, you know. So there's advantages and disadvantages. As far as advice for on camera, they will deal with not the best quality camera.
Mm-hmm.
And cameras are relatively inexpensive now. It's not like the old days of VHS where you got to cut tape to tape and all that. But clean sound and good lighting. If you have clean sound and good lighting and you're doing good work, you're doing your best self.
Good. I like that. That alone is such a step in the right direction because so many people don't even take care of that. And that'll,
right,
you know, that'll help them at least want to look at your
and hear
audition
you,
and
you know?
Hear you.
Yeah. Because as a matter of fact, I would invest, for those of you out there that are looking to set up your own rig, I would strongly suggest investing in a decent microphone before I would suggest investing in a really high-end camera.
good advice. Nice. Any particular mic you like while we're at it, while we're getting technical? Or
I mean, this is not a commercial for Rode, but
no.
We use a Rode mic here because they're relatively inexpensive and they adapt pretty well to anything. And so, yeah, but cool. I'm sure there's others. I'm not really
a technical genius. I'm not either, which is why I'm always looking for hot tips on that stuff.
I mean, yeah. You see our rig here. I had a buddy of mine is a location scout, and he worked on America's Top Model, and a couple years ago he came in here because I had all these lights set up and this rigging set up, and he said, Patrick, I can do what they do on that show, which is they just move this sort of rig you're looking at here, which is predominantly an upside-down U of, you know, fluorescent light,
mm-hmm.
and they move that rig around the actor's face, and they're perfectly lit, no matter what the skin tone, color, or anything like that, so that's why this rig is set up here. This is not an expensive thing. It's just it takes a little effort and time mm-hmm. to set it up to get the right look.
But it's worth doing if you're serious about this. You mentioned a moment ago that you were working with an adult actor, and I want to take a moment to just point out that just because your school is called Young Actor Space doesn't mean that you only work with people under the age of 18. Can you talk about that for a second?
We have three adult classes here. We have our on-camera class, and then we have two of our regular half improv, half scene study classes, which now have turned into, I hate the word showcase, we call them more demos, demonstration classes, but these adults are now putting on realized shows at sometimes at the end, twice a year, with their work they do in class. And it's because I think a lot of our kids have grown up and still like what we do here. And, you know, we might have people in class that are on a series, and we might have people in class that have never done this art form before but have always wanted to. Because we don't divide by just because you're working, you're advanced, because everybody can learn from everybody. I learn every day I teach. If I'm not learning, I should retire. Because that is honestly the reality of what's going on here. And you're going to show up to set, and you're going to get a series, and oftentimes on that series, you're going to be cast opposite somebody that has never done anything in their life. They might have a great Instagram following. And so you can learn from them.
It's true.
And they can learn from you. So we don't differentiate by degree based on resume. We all come here to sort of learn from each other, and we do. Somebody walking in off the street might have great behavioral stuff that I might borrow after having read and done this stuff for 30 years, you know?
It's really true. And it's so true that on a set, i.e. in real life, you will be in a cast, if you're fortunate enough to be in that cast, with people of every different experience level and ability level, you know? And so I like that you don't differentiate that way in your classes, because that's reflective of real life. But you do, in fact, with the kids, differentiate pretty... You make pretty fine slices with ages, I noticed, and I really like that as a parent. Like, that's cool. I don't want my 7-year-old doing a scene with a 16-year-old. I just don't.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, community theater is cool that way, too, but this is different, right?
Right, or hearing not only necessarily doing a scene, but what they're talking about when they're rehearsing the scene. Because we don't want the little ones annoying the older ones, and we want the older ones being respectful of their language and subject matter around the little ones.
Yeah, because they have different material, too.
Exactly. Now, they're going to work with younger ones and older ones on set, so we do occasionally, we'll have like our makeup class, which is in all ages, where they all get to work together, and those are fun. But really, we're broken down by age,
mm-hmm.
because that is the subject matter they're going to be working with at that time. So, it's really important.
Yeah.
That, you know, one of the things about Young Actor Space that is super important since day one is that this is a very supportive environment. We want to make sure that everybody's comfortable, and that doesn't mean that we're just here to tell you you're doing a great job, but if you're not feeling supported and you're not treating the work with respect and each other with respect, then how can you get up on stage and be vulnerable? How can you get in front of a camera and be vulnerable? You have to have that respect with each other and that support to go to these dark places sometimes and feel okay with it.
Yeah, you have to feel safe in order to create an authentic performance.
Absolutely.
I think. So, yeah, and it's true that on a set, as in, like, theater and real life, you are in mixed ages. Mm-hmm. But for the purpose of classes, I do like, and it's also kids are in different developmental spaces.
Correct.
You know, what a 7-year-old is able to grasp in terms of how to approach a character is not the same as what a 14-year-old is able to grasp.
Correct. I mean, the reality is, our goal is to teach to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we're in a tween class, mm-hmm. a 10 to 12-year-old class, and that 12-year-old is sort of becoming a 13 or 14-year-old and evolving at a quicker rate than their scene partner. At that point, after we know them for a while, we'll say, maybe check out this class and see if this is the right fit. Now, occasionally they'll come to that class and go, whoa, there's too much going on. This is too teen for me. And that's not, oh, now you're going backwards. That's just stay where you're at until you're ready to evolve forward. And that's okay, too.
But you can't possibly make that call until you get to know the young actor a little bit.
100%.
Like, you wouldn't do that just as they step in cold.
No. You know, we have people call and say, we're on a series, we should be in an older class. And it's like, you know, not necessarily.
Right, no, it's
really
true.
Let's see where your instrument is so we can best benefit your instrument.
Love that. And the whole person.
Exactly.
I know that some people feel weird about coaching over Skype, but it's 2018. Some people love coaching over Skype, getting coached over Skype. What are your feelings? You do a lot of coaching here.
We do, thankfully, yes. And you know, we have clients all over the world, really, at this point. There are upsides and downsides. Obviously, with Skype or Duo or FaceTime or whatever is the latest version of that, we're so lucky that exists. Because when I was doing this stuff growing up in Nashville, there was none of that. I had no idea what was going on. And to be able to actually see somebody and communicate with them, it is beneficial. And oftentimes, if they're doing something on camera, I'll have them set up camera and read with them as if I'm a casting director, and that way I get their, they have an eye line for me and they can talk. So we do that as well. The downside is sometimes Skype hesitates, mm-hmm. or stutters or pixelates, and if you're doing a take, that can ruin a take. Also, the downside oftentimes with doing it on Skype as opposed to in the room is, especially with comedy, you want to keep it clipping along. And if there is that hesitation and you're missing the joke or you're not on top of it, it can affect the way your coaching is going. However, at the end of the day, so grateful it exists because it's far beyond what we were dealing with even 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, and it allows actors from all over the world to be able to work with you and get your coaching. And it allows you to, you know, help and make a contribution to people who aren't just here in Los Angeles where you are.
Absolutely. And yeah. On that note, you know, I did a Criminal Minds a few years ago. I never saw the director when I was on set. I was in a hotel. And she was in another room. It was like being on Skype directing me from the monitor. So it makes sense. You know, I have clients that will do an on... Two weeks ago, I had a client who we sent a tape. The director was somewhere else, I don't know where in the world, and wanted to do a Skype interview for a final casting. So the callback was done over Skype. So it's happening.
Yeah, no
doubt.
There's
no way to just say it's not going to work because you just got to figure out a way to make it work.
It's reality. And especially with some of these bigger projects where, you know, maybe the director's in New York still doing some Broadway show and the producers are here in LA and the actors wherever on set somewhere else. Like, you can all make it happen. You can have these meetings, i.e. final callbacks, thanks to technology.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's happening more and more. It's not going to go away.
Yeah, so it's important to get comfortable with it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, on that note, mm-hmm. and we had a contributor here who's a casting director with, can I say, Big Fish? Yeah. So we had a casting director, and she gave us a list of things because she's in casting and does some Skype casting. And some of the mistakes people make are just so ridiculous that you're like, we have to say this? Like, you need to treat Skype like it's a job interview. Don't do a Skype in your pajamas.
Like, oh, let's run down these obvious tips because if people are making these mistakes,
people are
everybody
doing it.
Needs
like,
to hear about
she's
it.
She's like, you wouldn't believe how often I'm doing a casting and they show up in their pajamas or they don't know how to work Skype or they're late. And I'm like, you're at your own home. There's no reason for you to not. It's not like you're putting on a suit and getting in 110 degree heat and sweating, so you don't want to wear the suit. Like, show up, treat it like a job, be early, be appreciative. This, you know, we're not being roofers. Nothing against roofers, but they've got a tougher job than we do as actors, you know? Yeah. So you should be appreciative of the fact that you're having this opportunity. And it's just amazing that people forget that.
So treat it like the job interview that it is.
That it is, 110%.
Yeah, yeah. Don't be doing it in your car in your pajamas. Or, I mean, if you have to do it in your car, you have to do it in your car.
Sure. But I mean, you don't have to do it in your pajamas.
Probably not.
Unless it calls for you to be in your pajamas.
That's a whole other conversation.
That's a different conversation.
Costuming for auditions, generally a bad idea. What is your advice for someone who's just trying to break into the business? What are some critical first steps that an actor needs to take to succeed?
You know, read. There's so many great techniques and books out there. There's one right here I'm looking at.
Called
The Hollywood Parents Guide.
But yes,
there's so many opportunities for you to read. And read out loud. When you're eating your cereal, read the cereal box out loud. When you're driving around, read the billboards out loud. Get used to reading out loud. Find, if you're in a smaller community, smaller city, there's always theater going around somewhere. If not, if you can't get into your local community theater, find a buddy down the street and read out loud with them. Put on your own sort of scene work and plays. Just explore and keep your eyes open. People watch. Look at television, features, films, theater. Go see shows so you can see what's out there and see if it's really for you. Because, again, at the end of the day, if this is not fun, there is no reason to do it. It's too difficult. There's too much rejection out there. So it's got to be fun.
It better be fun. Well, and I love all these things that you said that have nothing to do with, say, you know, moving to LA or New York or getting an agent or getting your headshots. It's like, okay, fine, all that stuff too, but like, study it.
play.
Good at it. Have fun with it.
Absolutely.
There's so much you can do literally from where you are, wherever that may be.
And as you're aware, nowadays, if I have an idea, I can pick up my telephone, record it, and somebody in Australia could be watching it that night. If it's good, you know.
Are we talking about the YouTube?
The YouTubes, yes. The YouTubes and the Instagrams and the blah, blah, blah. It keeps going on. Blah, blah. But in reality, you can make content and have it seen. You know, years ago running around L.A., you would make content. You'd shoot on film, which was ridiculously expensive. You'd get three takes that you hope were right. You'd have to wait to get it developed. Then you'd have to transfer it to VHS or even beta. And then you'd put it in the mail and snail mail it to ads you got out of Variety and hope the producers still had, you know, an office there. And then wait 6 weeks and hope to hear and send letters. Nowadays, you can do all this stuff on your phone and have it out that night. So if you have an idea and it's good, get it out there.
Manifest it. Now, you have inevitably dealt with a lot of parents through your work coaching all these young actors over the years. Do you have any advice for parents specifically who are just trying to help their young actors succeed in this business?
You know, I do. I am so lucky, to be honest with you. In all my years of doing this, we've only had to ask three actors to not come back.
Ooh.
Now, think about that.
Three out of, oh, man.
Hundreds of thousands that have come through our doors. Tens of thousands, probably, that have come through our doors. Because, if it's not fun, what are we all doing?
Yeah.
Then it's not fun for me. Then it feels like a job. Then it's not fun for your child. And these three were primarily the same thing. Go play football for a couple years. Go do a sport. And then you might come back to it. But so the parent thing, you know, you hear a lot about stage parents and all this. I've been really lucky. I am so grateful for so many of the parents that have come here and shared their children with us, in a sense, and shared their art. Because if it ain't working, they get it, usually. 25 years that I had to say, come back a little later. That's I'm pretty lucky.
What I'm hearing between the lines is it sounds like the parents were driving the show instead of the children driving it. Like the parents wanted this for the kids more than the kids wanted it.
Yeah. Now, one was an adult.
Something along those lines? Okay.
One was an adult who was here just to sort of, I think, be around celebrity.
Oh.
I don't know that for a fact. But he, she, I'm not going to say.
Sure.
Right. That person, just after years, just not putting in the work, I finally just had to say, until you're ready to put in the work, I can't babysit you anymore.
Right.
Now, this person had been with us since they were a little bit younger, and it's okay to help somebody at a certain age. But once you become an adult and you're still not putting in the work...
It's work. I think people really, in many cases, don't fully appreciate that this is work like any other work, and you need to work at it to have any possibility of success. If you love it, it doesn't feel like work, but it is still work.
Yeah. And honestly, I feel like the audition is oftentimes harder than the actual job.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the audition, we all get the, am I worthy of being here thing. We also get the, did I do enough work thing. And then you get the, can I be on this set thing that goes on.
A lot of anxiety.
And then once you book it, you've already done the, you've got the lines down. You've already done all the work. You show up and oftentimes everybody's your best friend. They're like, let us help you. Let us give you a moment. You know, they treat you like a king or a queen. And it's completely opposite of when, oftentimes when you're sitting in that audition room, not feeling like that king or queen.
Yeah. Yeah. So for parents, my experience parallels yours. I would say all the parents that I've dealt with, you know, formally and informally over the years at this point, the vast majority are just like really good, normal, grounded people who are just doing their best to help their kids.
And want to help their child.
Just trying to help their kid who's passionate and just loves this and wants it. And they're like trying to figure it out because they love their kid. And it's a tiny minority of people who don't fall into that category. And for some reason, I don't know what it is, we hear about and think about like the classic stage parents, you know, the horror show is what we associate with that. But that is not who parents of young actors are.
Luckily, yeah.
Luckily.
That's not been my experience. Now, occasionally that arises, but you sort of step on it. And you remind them that this is all about fun.
Yeah, it's got to be about fun.
But yes, I totally agree with you. The majority of people that come here are trying to do something great for their child, like we all kind of would like to do. I have a set of parents who are so dear, and they showed up with this wonderful child who just booked a pretty remarkable project, and they're scientists. And they're like, we have this son/daughter who loves this art form, and we have no idea where this came from or what to do with it.
Yeah.
And it's just so wonderful because you're talking to scientists about, you know, and it reminds me kind of like maybe what my parents felt like with me when I was a kid.
Yep.
Because here I am in Tennessee, and really at that point your option was football or football. And I'm you know, getting the neighbors to come over at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, my mom's in her pajamas, and I'm handing her an army helmet and saying, take a nickel from people, I'm going to read them about the Battle of Navarone out of the encyclopedia. She's like, what are all the neighbors doing at my house? Like, I can't imagine what my parents thought.
I'm putting on a show, Mom.
Yeah. I'd gone around the neighborhood and put up, you know, box tops. And there's a show for 5 cents, you know, just ridiculous. And I think about my poor mother at that point going, what do we do about this?
What do we do with this kid? With and, him, for him.
Yeah, exactly.
About him.
If my daughter came to me and was like, I want to be a rocket scientist, I'd probably be the same way. Like, great. What do I do?
Yeah.
Somebody help, because I want to give my child their dreams. And I think oftentimes that's what we are lucky enough to deal with here at Young Actor Space. I'm not saying always. Mm-hmm. There are moments.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority, I'd rather focus on the majority, which is where they're all sort of, we're coming together for the common good.
That's the vast majority. Well, so specific suggestions for them, other than, say, finding, if they're fortunate, a young actor's space, you know, or a place to help their children, you know, get some training and support?
I think that's the word, support.
So any like sort of specific hot tips for parents on how they can best support their kids who are young actors or who want to be young actors? Because you're right, support is really the germane.
Support is key. Now, having said that, don't coach them. Don't overcoach them. Because if you start coaching them or they take a note, depending on their age, that's the only note they're going to hear. And when they get in front of a casting director, they're not going to be able to get out of that. And so it's really important that they don't lock into something that's not playable. Please, I can't tell you how many years after working with children and about or adults and about to send them out to the audition, and I turn the corner here and I look in the bathroom and the mom's got the brush out and is brushing the child's hair, and I'm like, give me the brush. Don't send them in like beauty pageant. Send them in as kids. They're kids. What they wear to school, that's their audition outfit most of the time.
Most of the time.
Be very careful about costuming and over-costuming. You can give something that lends itself to the role, but don't go out and rent costumes or buy clothes for these auditions. And don't get them hyped up on caffeine or chocolate before the audition. That doesn't work. And make sure they're obviously well-fed and well-hydrated, especially if they have a crying scene. And please don't fight with them in the car. It's counterproductive. We'll go through relaxation exercises here and get these actors ready for auditions, and then we'll say goodbye to them and wish them luck and throw them some magic dust, and I see them get in the car and they start fighting with their kids about this and that and this, and it totally undoes the work we just did for an hour beforehand. They're going to have enough of that. All actors are going to have enough of that. So be the opposite of that. Support, get them relaxed, and tell them the moment the audition is over, let's move on for the next one.
That's beautiful. And I mean, I have to speak as a parent myself on this one, and I've helped Dove through literally countless auditions at this point, and when she was younger and, you know, living at home because she was still a kid. If you're a parent, you've inevitably got stuff to deal with your kid, like, you know, don't forget to do your homework tonight, or like, you know, how come you didn't, you know, clean out the cat box or whatever. Those conversations may need to happen, but they do not ever need to happen in the car on the way to the audition. They can wait. And we're not saying, you know, never upset your child actor. never throw anything their way that's going to make them, you know, less than completely happy. We're just saying be mindful and maybe a little bit of disciplined in order to best support your kid when they're going into an audition. Because, you know, they got enough stuff to deal with at that moment.
That's 100% the case, yeah. Yeah, I'll never forget, I was teaching here about 5 years, and it was a little bit longer I'd been here. And one of the great, if I said this person's name, you'd know exactly who I'm talking about, but I'm not going to say it, one of the great improvisers of our time, who you've seen, shows up with his daughter to come into my improv class.
How are you feeling at this moment?
Oh, I'm horrified. Terribly horrified. I'm like, what do I say? But the reality is, it's a parent and a daughter. And just like I'm not going to do my daughter's physical. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to, that's for somebody else to do.
Yeah.
And so it's too close of a relationship oftentimes for you to coach your own child.
Well, and especially, let's be honest, most parents are not professional acting coaches or managers, which is a whole other conversation, but, you know, my place where I stand is I think parents should be parents.
Absolutely.
Because nobody else can do that.
Now, part of that parenting, you can help them get off book.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't give them line readings.
Yeah, and you probably will be the one helping them memorize their lines.
Absolutely.
And get off book, because, you know, who else is going to do that?
And you can pay for their headshots and make sure their resume is updated. There's plenty of things you can do.
Absolutely.
Just not right before the audition.
Exactly. What about the kids themselves? We talked a little bit about this before, you know, what somebody can do who's trying to break into the business. But if you're like a kid, you know, you're under 18, and you don't live in L.A. or New York.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that you can do right now, wherever you are, if you're in Tennessee or Washington or whatever, to help prepare, move toward that dream you've got?
Find a kindred spirit and start creating content. That can happen wherever you are. Find somebody that you get along with that respects your work, that isn't going to tear you down, and start creating content. Because we're in a world where you can create content and upload it every day. And as we discussed, getting into your local community theater or go watch plays and people watch, all of that stuff is great.
And totally available. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that Dove did that I know she's not alone in doing is she deliberately went about watching classic top-notch performances in classic top-notch film from decades back.
Yep.
Not just, you know, whatever's out this week. You know, and you can learn so much by studying fine, fine acting that may have been done before you were born.
Absolutely. Yep. There's a lot of content out there to look at.
Yeah, there is. Any final thoughts for young actors or for parents of young actors who are hoping to make a career in film and TV?
Just have fun. That's the final thought. You know, we had a director in here years ago, and he was a pretty well-known actor, a director. He's an actor as well, but very well-known as a director. And he said something that I'll always remember, which is he was on location for this movie, and they were running late, and there was, you know, they were losing the sun, and it was over budget, and there were some pretty decent-sized celebrities in this. And the location guy comes up to me. He's like, this is where we're going to get our shot, and we're going to shoot it right here. And the location guy came up to him, kind of tugged him on the shoulder, and said, you know, if you go down there, it's a much better shot. And he's like, I don't have time for this. We're losing the sun. We've got to get this shot right now. And he said, till this day, they got the shot. It's fine. Nobody in the movie recognized it. And after they got the shot, they were wrapping up, and he walked down, he said, to the end of the pier, and he goes, this would have been a much better shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I echo his sentiment, which is, go to the end of the pier.
Mm.
Because there might be a better shot down there.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes your entire career is based on the next person that says yes. You're going to hear no, 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 no. And if you give up, we don't know if that next person was the one that says yes. And I have seen it many, many times. That first person that says, or that next person that says yes, can change a whole career.
Everything. Can change your life.
Can change your life. 100%.
So hold out, walk down to the end of the pier.
As long as it's fun.
As long as it's fun. And if it's not fun, go find some other
environment. Go find something that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, Patrick.
Oh, thank you. What a pleasure.
So before I let you go, can you share with us how people can find you?
Oh, absolutely. We have a new website at youngactorspace.com. We're on Facebook at Young Actors Space. Our Twitter is a little bit different. It's Young Actors SPC. And we're on Instagram at Young Actors Space. And YouTube, we have a Young Actors Space.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Thank you. What a joy. What a pleasure. I'm glad you came in and talked to me today.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoyed the podcast, take a second and subscribe. It is so easy. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and sign up at the bottom of the homepage, and you'll get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. Don't miss it. If you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And for one-on-one coaching that will save you thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, invest in a consultation session with me over phone or Skype or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. In 60 or 90 minutes, whichever one you choose, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. I work with parents who want to help their child become a happy, successful actor, inside or outside of Hollywood, and I can help you. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.